Today we're going to look at a story from the life of Jesus. It's the story that Don has already read to us out of Luke chapter 17. And in truth, if I had my preferences, I would almost rather have us gathered together in a small little group where I could sit with you and tell you the story. But our facilities and our services don't really permit that. And so hopefully I can engage you, even standing up here, in this story in such a way it will be such a blessing to you as it has been for me for a long, long time. The story is told to us by Luke. Luke is a wordsmith. Now that might not be a word you're familiar with, but in the work I do with a school and with lots of writing and other things, a wordsmith is someone who is a consummate professional at using just the right words to say just the right thing at the right time. A wordsmith, a master author, writer, communicator. And Luke works with much of the same material as did Matthew and Mark and John. As we know, the four Gospels have much of the same material in them. And yet he often found things that the others did not mention. And he often told stories the others did not tell. This is one of those stories that is unique to him. But it's more than just the fact that the story is unique to him. What he tells us in the story is also quite impressive. When Jesus began his ministry, very early on, he delivered what we call the Sermon on the Mount. And he began that sermon, if sermon is the right word to describe what it was, with what's called the Beatitudes. We have those most clearly and effectively recorded in Matthew's Gospel, although Mark and Luke also have records of it. But in the Beatitudes, one of those Beatitudes that Jesus expressed is in Matthew 5:5, where he said, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." And then he said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy." Now to us, familiarity has sort of bred a little bit of, if not contempt, at least indifference toward these statements. But these truly were foundational principles of what Jesus expected his disciples to do and to be. And this isn't a message this morning about the Beatitudes, but one of them, the last one I just read there, said, "Blessed are the merciful." The word mercy in the Greek language of the New Testament was the word eleo, and it meant to help someone who is afflicted, to give aid, to help, to have mercy on them. To the Jewish people, one of their treasured, practical, daily expressions of their spiritual life was benevolence or helping others. That's why Jesus will go on in the Sermon on the Mount to talk about those who would do their benevolence to be seen of others. If that's their motive for doing it, is to impress other people, that's all the reward they'll get out of it. Jesus wasn't condemning benevolence. Instead, he was saying people need to have the right motive when they practice it. The same was true of prayer and of fasting, the other two things he mentioned at the same time. But this idea of being merciful, of having a tender heart for those who are in affliction of various kinds and rendering aid to them. The story of the Good Samaritan is the story of someone who was merciful. Jesus' ministry was marked over and over by his mercy toward those in affliction. As he healed people, that was mercy. Now, not everyone had the gift of healing. In fact, no one else. And yet, they still were expected to extend mercy to those in affliction. Because of this concept of mercy or rendering aid to others, and the fact that the Jewish people touted the fact that they were a benevolent people toward those in need, we find throughout the New Testament, or throughout the Gospels, people who were constantly calling on Jesus to be merciful to them. You remember some of the stories? When he's coming through Jericho, here's a blind man by the name of Bartimaeus. And when he hears from the crowd that's passing by, he of course can't see, but he hears from the crowd that Jesus is passing by. And so the man starts crying out at the top of his voice, "Jesus, Son of David, be merciful to me. Render aid in my affliction," he was saying. What was he really asking for? He wasn't asking for a handout. Now, if it had been someone else passing by, that is what he would have been asking for. But he was asking Jesus to do what only Jesus could do, heal. Numerous other examples we have of that. In Matthew chapter 9, we have the story of two blind men who are crying out to Jesus as he passes by, "Be merciful to us. Have mercy on us." In Matthew 15, we have the story of a Canaanite woman, a woman who wasn't even Jewish herself, but she came to Jesus and asked Jesus to heal her daughter. But she began that conversation with Jesus by saying, "Have mercy on me. Render aid in my affliction." Even in the story of the rich man and Lazarus, which, though not a parable, it is a story, and it's not about someone being healed, but it is a story of a man who had everything and a man who had nothing. And then when they died, the one who had everything wakes up finding himself in misery and suffering, while the man who had nothing crosses over to the other side of life and is in the bosom of Abraham. But do you remember what the man who was in intense torment, the former rich man, says? "Father Abraham, send Lazarus. Maybe he can just dip the tip of his finger in water and touch my tongue. Have mercy on me," he said. So here we get this picture of mercy, okay? That's all I'm doing with this. Luke is going to use that word. He uses it over and over. It had a word that was rich in content and filled with meaning. And so we have this story here in Luke chapter 17. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He already knows what awaits him there. His ministry is wrapping up. He's reaching the end of his public ministry. He is now going to accomplish what he came to accomplish in Jerusalem. And as he's making his way down from Galilee for the last time to Jerusalem, he's crossing right along the border between Galilee and Samaria. We know there were times he crossed over into Samaria, as in the story of the Samaritan woman in John 4. But most of the time he followed the traditional Jewish practice of not going into Samaria. But he's walking so close along the border that when it came time for them to find food, they would actually cross over into Samaria into a village to get food. Jesus wasn't prejudiced in the way that most of his fellow Jews were. And yet he did have respect for their prejudices, knowing that his first mission was to them. And so he had to maintain some kind of credibility with them. But in all of that, we have this story. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. And as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." The NIV that I normally read out of here actually has the word pity, but it's this word elio, which means to have mercy, to render aid in affliction. Leprosy then was a much more dire disease even than it is now. Certainly they found some things that treated and some things that helped them to know how to deal with it much better than then. But leprosy was an incurable disease. It's kind of an interesting thing that back in the law of Moses in Leviticus chapter 13 and 14, very strict laws are given about what to do when someone developed a disease like leprosy. It wasn't limited just to leprosy, the instructions, but it included leprosy. That when someone developed this disease, they were examined by the priest, and the priest would determine that it was not just like the measles or a rash or something like that, that it was a permanent thing. was a disease. And at that point, the person was forced out of the community. They were no longer allowed to live in the homes of their families. They were no longer allowed to stay in the villages or the towns where they were from. They had to live out away from other people. But not only that, they had to display by the way they dressed that they were people of this kind. And so they had to wear clothes that were old and torn. That was the law. They had to wear a mask or a veil over the lower part of their face. They were told not to care for their hair. And most of us, if we don't care for our hair just one day, we know what it looks like. What if you're told that you can never brush your hair and make it look nice? So you, after a while, if it's a man at least, and I'll let the ladies imagine for themselves, you're going to look like a wild person. And you're wearing these old torn clothes, you wear this mask over your face, you can't get close to anyone, and if anyone comes close to you, you have to shout out and warn people, unclean, unclean. That's these men. That's the life they're living. Now, because the Jews were told to be benevolent, they received some care, probably from the people in this village. Those who had this heart of mercy would, from time to time, I think, bring food out or other things and leave for them, but then just leave it and go away. And they would feel like they had done their part to be merciful. And these men would just sort of eke out an existence outside of this village, or maybe even, not in the scriptures necessarily, but in another place we read that some of them actually form sort of wandering bands of people that would move about from place to place looking for some way to maintain themselves. And so you had these whole communities of lepers. Here is one such small group of 10. This is not the first time Jesus has dealt with lepers. Luke actually tells a story back in chapter 5 of Jesus healing a man with leprosy. That story is quite amazing because there in Luke chapter 5 and verse 12, when Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Then Jesus did the unthinkable. It says Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. In the Jewish law, to touch a leper made you unclean for 7 days. It meant for the next 7 days, you could not go into the temple. You had to go through a ceremony afterwards even to become clean again. It didn't just automatically expire after 7 days. You actually had to wait the 7 days plus go through a ceremony to be ceremonially clean again to go into the temple. Jesus accepted that penalty to touch this man. And I just wonder, when was the last time anyone had ever touched that man? But Jesus did. He reached out his hand and touched the man and said, "I am willing, be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. And then Jesus ordered him, "Don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Yet the news about Jesus spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Well, here we are 2 years later. Jesus is passing along by this village. And actually, it says as they were going into it, they meet these 10 men. And has the word spread about Jesus even to them? You know, even people who are outcasts have some kind of communication system, it seems. And word had spread about Jesus. And had these men heard that there was someone named Jesus who actually healed lepers? For as he's coming into the village, they call him by name. Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. Perhaps they've heard the stories of him having healed others. Did they wonder if they would even have the opportunity ever in their life to see him and ask him to heal them too? And now that opportunity is there. And when he saw them, apparently in this case, they don't approach him up close. And he doesn't approach them. But when he saw them, he said, go show yourselves to the priest. Now, if they'd heard the story of the earlier man, they would know what that meant. The law said that if someone should be cured of their leprosy, even though in all the Old Testament we only have two records of people who ever were, but if you ever were cured of the leprosy, the law said in Leviticus 13 and 14, you should go and present yourself to the priest. He would examine you. There'd be a time of waiting. He would examine you again. And if no leprosy was present, then a ceremony would be gone through, sacrifices would be made, and you would be declared clean. And you could go home to your family, and you could become a part of the community again and associate with other people and all of that. So when Jesus tells them to go show yourself to the priest, he's telling them that they've been made clean. Now, I think at the moment he says that, they look at their skin and it's still leprous. But it does say, and as they went, they were cleansed. What was Jesus expecting out of them? Some faith in him, some trust. Believe him. Don't believe what your eyes are seeing right now, but believe what I'm telling you. And so when they believe him, they go. Apparently this is a village in which there was a priest living. You didn't have to go all the way to the priest at the temple in Jerusalem. The priest lived throughout the Jewish nation. They just came up to the temple once or twice a year to serve their 2 weeks of service up there. But other than that, they lived with the other people. And so as they go towards where the priest was, it says they were cleansed. Now this word cleansed is a kind of a unique word too. I've already commented some on mercy. The word cleansed used throughout the Gospels is used exclusively to describe what happens to lepers. Over and over it talks about lepers were cleansed. The word literally meant to be made pure again. You might remember the story in the Old Testament of the man who came to, Elisha, wasn't it? That he was a commander of the armies of the king of Damascus, the Aramaeans. And he had leprosy, and he wanted to be cleansed of it. And he's told to go wash 7 times in the Jordan River. And when he came up the seventh time, it says his skin was pure. It was clean. It was without any marring or any disease about it. That's that unique. That was in Hebrew, but in the Greek they use this word cleanse, to be pure. I say it's used throughout the Gospels only to describe lepers. It's interesting when we move over into the Acts and the Epistles, it appears several more times. It also is used there to always describe what God has done to our heart. Isn't it interesting that a medical term, and Luke is a doctor, a medical term that originally meant, and first of all meant, what happened to lepers when they were cleansed by Jesus, is then used by the Apostle Paul and Luke in the book of Acts to describe what happened to people's hearts when they obeyed the gospel. It's almost as if they're saying, in a spiritual sense, our hearts have leprosy, but God makes them clean. As they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. Now, the word praising there, again, I'm reading from the NIV, the Greek word is glorifying God. We have a word in our English language, sort of a religious technical term called doxology. It means the science or the study of glorifying. Doxa is the Greek term. And that's the word being used here. He came back glorifying God in a loud voice. Remember, they started out in a loud voice asking Jesus to have mercy on them. He comes back with an equally loud voice, glorifying God. The word glorify, or doxa, in the Greek language, in the general term, meant to magnify, to honor, to praise, to extol his grace, his majesty, his dignity, his excellence, or his preeminence. It wasn't limited just to God. There were kings who were self-important enough to want to be glorified by others, and they would take the glorification that others would sometimes give them. You might remember the story in the book of Acts of Herod, who, being half Jewish, at least claimed to be Jewish by religion, if not by race, he knew that no one should be glorified except God, and yet when people would magnify and glorify him, he accepted that praise and God struck him down. But this man comes back extolling the majesty of God, saying, "Look what God has done for me. How great he is. How worthy he is to be praised." This is what the man is doing because he realizes that he's been cleansed of his leprosy. His skin is now clean, pure. And he approaches Jesus, praising God in a loud voice, and he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. This word thanked in the Greek language. I told you Luke was a wordsmith, a master at writing. The word Eucharistio that appears in the New Testament 38 times. That's the word here. Eucharistio. Now in Greek itself, it just meant to express gratitude and thanksgiving for what one had received. But we're not just talking about what it meant in the Greek language. It appears, as I said, 38 times in the New Testament. Every other place in the New Testament the word appears, the thanksgiving is always to God. And yet we find it here, and this man is thanking Jesus. To the Jewish mind, the word Eucharistio always meant to give thanks to God. And yet what is this man doing? Giving thanks to Jesus. He saw, in some sense, that Jesus was God on earth. He didn't need to know about the resurrection. He didn't know about the virgin birth. All he knew was that Jesus had done for him what no one but God could do. And so in his mind, Jesus was God on earth. That's why he's down on his face at his feet, because that's how you approach God, you see. And that's why the word Luke uses, Eucharistio, is used, because that was when you gave thanks to God. But there's an interesting twist to the story. And he was a Samaritan. He was of that race of people that the Jews loved to hate. They despised. They mistreated. They were worse than prejudiced toward them. They went out of their way to show their hatred and disdain and to mistreat them. He was a Samaritan. It doesn't surprise us that Jesus in his ministry seemed to go out of his way to extol some of the finer virtues of Samaritans. It tells us in John 4, when he stops off at that well in Samaria, it said he had to go through Samaria, John tells us. That makes me think that the apostles had urged Jesus not to go through Samaria, but he insisted that he had to go that way. And so they went. And he ends up meeting this woman at the well outside of Sychar, and she becomes a believer in him, and she goes into the village and tells the other people about Jesus, and they come out, and they also become believers in him. And what's so interesting about that is that while he's out there talking to the woman and developing faith in her, do you know where his apostles are? They're in that same town, but what are they doing? Are they telling anybody about Jesus? No. They're in there doing as little as they have to. They're in there buying food and coming back out again. And nobody hears about Jesus from them. The Samaritans hear about Jesus from the woman who was also a Samaritan, not from Jesus' own disciples. I think they're put to shame by the whole thing. I think Jesus shames them ultimately through this story. The story of the Good Samaritan is a story of how a Samaritan does what Jews didn't do. And there are numerous other stories that involve either Samaritans or Canaanites or Roman centurions in which Jesus shows that people who are not of God's chosen people still are part of God's plan. He was a Samaritan. And Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give glory to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, I want you to catch this. Then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." Now, when this man had first left Jesus to go find the priest, his faith had made him what? Cleansed. It had cleansed his leprosy. But Jesus doesn't use that word here. He says, "Your faith has made you well." It says in NIV, the other translations will use words like whole or safe. And it's a very interesting word as well. I've tried to count it up, and as near as I can tell, it appears about 54 times in the New Testament. 14 times, it had to do with people being made well from disease. Of the 54, 14 of them did have to do with being made well from disease. 20 times, it had to do with people being rescued from either danger or death. And the other 20 times, it clearly had to do with people being saved. For example, one of our favorite scriptures, Mark 16:16. Remember what it says? Jesus issuing the Great Commission, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believes and is baptized will be saved." That's this word right here. The word soso in Greek. "He that believes and is baptized will be made whole," will be made well. He's not talking about their physical ailments will be cured, is he? He's talking about their spiritual condition. Back in Luke chapter 7, while Jesus is at a feast that someone has put on for him, a woman comes in. It's a scandal. She's a sinful woman in that town. As far as we know, she has no physical affliction, but she has a spiritual problem. She comes in and just silently kneels down at the feet of Jesus and is weeping. And her tears are falling on his feet. And then she takes her hair and she starts trying to wipe his feet with her hair to dry the tears that's wetting his feet. Remember that story? Someone rebukes Jesus and rebukes her for what's going on. It says in Luke 7:39, the man is named Simon who put on the party or the dinner. "And when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, 'If this man were truly a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner.'" And Jesus answered him. The man's thinking it. Jesus knows what he's thinking. And Jesus verbally says back to a man who hadn't even opened his mouth, "Simon, I have something to tell you." And he said, "Tell me, teacher." And he tells him the story of two men who owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he canceled the debts of both. "Now which of them will love him more?" And Simon replied, "I suppose the one who had the bigger debt canceled." And Jesus said, "You have judged correctly." Then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I came in..." Simon couldn't see anything else right then. I mean, it was a scandal to him. I mean, his whole dinner party has been messed up as far as he's concerned. "Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not pour oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little." And then Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." The other guests began to say among themselves, "Who is this that even forgives sins?" And Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you." That expression, "your faith has saved you," is word for word the exact expression that's here in Luke 17:19 that Jesus says to the leper, "Your faith has made you well." It's exactly the same word for word. What had Jesus done for the woman? He'd forgiven her sins. And she was now spiritually whole, well. The leprous man has already been healed of his leprosy. But now when he comes back, glorifying God, falling on his face and thanking Jesus, Jesus tells him, now your faith has saved you. More than just having made him clean, healed him, it has now made him right with God. And he was a Samaritan. It's only a few days after Thanksgiving. Here was a man who was thankful for what the Lord had done for him. I know for myself, I just have to confess, I am not as thankful as I ought to be for what God has done for me. I still remember very clearly that day I made that decision to become a Christian and I was baptized, and how thankful I was at that point in time. But folks, that was a long time ago. And after a while, what you were once so thankful for, you start taking for granted. And like the Jewish people around Jesus, they soon just began to assume somehow they deserved it. And they would accept the gifts of God and the things He did for them and think it was theirs by right. And it took a Samaritan to show how thankful they really should have been. And it was only when we could have the heart of the Samaritan we can enjoy more than just the physical blessings that God gives and actually enjoy salvation as well, just like this man. We have an invitation song. If I halfway remember right, I think it's, what, I Need Thee Every Hour? Yeah. It just reminds us that our gratitude should never wane when it comes to thinking about what God has done and is doing and will do for us. We should always be profoundly thankful for what we have, for what God has done for us. Is there any way we can help each other in our walk with God? You can come and let us know this morning, now, while we stand up and sing the song.